The Hawk Talk podcast is brought to you by Heinemann Services. Heinemann Services is a family-owned and operated business whose work ethic and customer service will restore your confidence in handymen. They offer interior and exterior projects for your home or business, including repairs, installations, small remodels, landscaping, decks, fencing, and much more. Call Corey and his crew today at 479-347-9336. That's 479-347-9336.
Falling too fast to prepare for this. Tripping in the world could be dangerous. Everybody circling as vultures. Negative, nepotist. Everybody waiting for the fall of man. Everybody praying for the end of times. Everybody hoping they could be the one. I was born to run, I was born for this.
Whip, whip, run me like a racehorse. Pull me like a ripcord. Break me down and build me up. I wanna be the slip, slip. Word upon your lip, lip. Rather that you rip, rip. Break me down and build me up. Whatever it takes.
Razorback Nation, welcome into episode number 110 of the Hog Talk podcast. My name is Kyle Sutherland. If you have not already, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen. We are there. And while you're there, if you could please leave us a written review and give us some star power, it helps get our name out there and reach more people. Here in the next couple of minutes, myself and Kevin Bohanna are going to be interviewing D1 Baseball's Kendall Rogers. But before we get to that, we've got to talk about the news of the weekend. Of course, that is Isaiah Joe announcing that he will be returning to the Razorbacks for his junior season after what seemed like an eternity that he was deciding whether he was going to keep his name entered in the draft or he would return. And he finally makes that decision, as this will be dropping on a Monday. That deadline, August 3rd, would be the time that he would have to announce his decision. I'll be honest with you guys. I thought from the time that he announced, I thought he was going to be coming back. I definitely understand why he was testing the draft waters. There was rumors of a couple of teams really, really liking him. There was also some rumors of him getting a few private workouts with various teams. But up until, I guess it was this past week, I said on the podcast on Friday that I did think he was going to go pro. That's the first time that ever came out of my mouth. And I was pretty confident that me changing my decision was going to be correct. I'm happy to be wrong here. We now have an extremely deep roster. Last year, we were small, really didn't have a whole lot of depth. You're playing with about 7-8 players, really mainly 7. And here we are this year, and it's like the roster is endless. I would say without question, I don't think it's even close that this is the deepest roster that we've had since 1995, when we returned to the national championship and lost to UCLA after winning the year before against Duke. You think about just the grad transfers, Justin Smith, Jalen Tate, and Vance Jackson. That's already going to provide you some immediate depth. I think that those three, all of them, will be a much better experiment than something like what we saw last year with Gene Tolsilla. Nothing against him. It's just, you know, you get a guy that comes from scoring 1,000 points, albeit at a smaller program, just really didn't do a whole lot, really did essentially nothing. I don't think that's going to be the case with these guys. You've got a forward like Vance Jackson, who can stretch the floor, do so many different things with his 6'9 frame. Then you've got Jalen Tate, who is a pretty dang good point guard. He was the Horizon League player of the year. I believe it was the Horizon League where he was the player of the year last year. And then you've got Justin Smith, an athletic freak that's good. That's 6'7". He can play guard or forward. He's a forward at 6'7". And I've seen a lot of different things regarding him about he's not very great when he's driving the lane, all this stuff. I haven't really watched a whole lot about him, but I'll tell you this, with his athleticism, the way that he can jump out of the gym, I'm not so sure that he will be a starter. I actually listed my starters on Twitter yesterday being as Saturday as I'm recording this, that I have my starting five. I've got Jalen Tate at point guard at the one. This actually, you can still get in on this conversation. There's people continuously talking about it, and you can talk about who you think will be the starting five. It's actually been a pretty good thread, I think. And so I have Jalen Tate at the one. And then I have Isaiah Joe at the two, staying there. Moses Moody, true freshman. There's no question. I think that Joe and Moody will be a shoe-in for anybody's starting five. So Moody at the three, Vance Jackson at the four, and Connor Vanover at the five. I think you definitely put Connor Vanover there. You got to have some size. But the majority of the teams that you're going to play, especially when you get into conference, you're going to have some size there. We lacked that majorly last year. But there's so many different lineups that you can go with. I know a lot of people have Justin Smith in theirs. There's a whole lot just really that you can pick from. And that's something that Coach Musselman just didn't have the option of last year. What kind of role will Jalen Williams play, the true freshman forward? He'll more than likely possibly back up Connor Vanover at the five, while will Ethan Henderson possibly back up Vance Jackson if he plays the four. Now, this is just me generally speaking, if the lineup is the way that I have it. But the point is you've got somebody that can more than likely get really good minutes behind each starter. And also, too, a guy that I don't think is being talked about enough is Devo Davis. So you got this top five class with Moses Moody, K.K. Robinson. That's another guy that I haven't mentioned. And Jalen Williams. And then you've got Devo Davis out of Jacksonville, Arkansas, hardly being talked about. And so I don't think that that's really a lack of respect towards Devo. It's just there's so many high profile in terms of the other two being Moses Moody and K.K. Robinson with the kind of publicity and notoriety that they have given. So I think this is an incredible problem to have. And I put quotes around problem because this is just completely the opposite of what Coach Muss had from last year. And again, I really would love, I know that by the time that this thing drops, the talk of, well, not even really just my tweet, I'm just saying in general, if you want to get in on that conversation, it'll be a couple of days old by that point. If you want to find it at Sutherland54WPS, like Wupig Sui, you can get in on the conversation. There's a lot of good talks in there from various fans and people that listen to our pod or just happen to see the tweet on Twitter. So, again, very, very excited for what we have with the future of basketball. We just got to hope that this COVID deal is at least way more controlled, you would think, or it's not going to, I say controlled because it's not going to just go away. But I would think that by the time basketball season is here, that things would have been taken care of, but I thought we'd have football in full swing right now. So who knows? We shall see. It will be interesting, no doubt. But that's really all we got for the first segment. Just wanted to give my reaction to Isaiah Joe returning. I'm very excited for basketball, just like I think everybody is. Going to be some awesome times, guys. Coach Muss has this program rolling right along, and I don't think this is going to be just something on paper. I think this is legit, and I'm very stoked, just like the rest of us. But without further ado, here is the next segment with myself, Kevin Bohannon, and Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball.
We're now joined by the co-managing editor of D1 Baseball, also known as the hater of most teams, Kendall Rogers. Kendall, really appreciate you coming on with us, man. And I'll ask you first. Normally, we've been starting off by asking our guests what they've been doing during quarantine. And I know you just got back from vacation from some of the stuff I saw on Twitter. How was traveling during all this craziness?
Well, first of all, I no longer hate teams at this point. Like, I think I love everybody because I just want to play some baseball. But no, it's been interesting, man. You know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to somebody the other day about the day that the season got canceled. And, you know, it's really one of those days that, like, you kind of look back and you know, this is making a rough comparison. I'm just saying, like, society in general. Like, the only thing I can really think of that feels a little bit like it was, like, 9/11. Like, the first day that everything was just canceled across the country was almost kind of mind-numbing. And so to think back – I mean, that was how long ago now? Was that 4 or 5 months ago? I mean, it seems like it was like 4 years ago now. But,
yeah, 4 months.
You know, it's been interesting. I've spent a lot of time with the kids. Obviously, I found out that I was a very, very poor teacher in the spring. Unfortunately, I have to teach a little bit to start this school year too because we don't start till the middle of September now. But, you know, other than that, you know, it's been kind of nice getting out to some summer baseball games. I got out to some summer collegiate games at Texas Collegiate League. I've been able to follow a lot of the action around the country. And, you know, what's been nice as well is, you know, things really haven't slowed down on our site. You know, the California Collegiate League still playing, the San Diego League still playing. There's all these other leagues that are still playing, even though the big ones like the Cape Cod League aren't. So, you know, we've been pretty busy and thankfully I was able to get out and take a vacation to Colorado. I have to admit, getting on the plane for the first time since all this started was a little odd. But, you know, the whole plane smelled like a doctor's office. Somebody asked me, like, what was it like? I was like, honestly, like, it was like going into like a sterile, like, doctor's office. That's how clean it smelled on the plane. So it was actually a lot more comfortable than I expected. So I better get used to it. That's going to be our world here in the next few months going into the spring where I hope we play college baseball. Of course, a lot of things could change between now and then. You've got, you know, college football. We're all hoping, you know, obviously that is played. And then, you know, you look to early spring and, you know, we may even have a vaccine or something. So we got a lot at stake here the next few months.
If the plane was sterile, you said. Was there social distancing? I know on like Instagram and Twitter,
absolutely
I've not seen
not.
That. There was not, yeah. Yeah, it was. I saw something on Instagram somebody posted the other day, and they were just like, man, I mean, this thing's packed to capacity. We're like 2 inches apart.
Oh, no. On the way up, so we had about a row in between. We had about a row in between each seat on the way up there. On the way back, everything was full from Denver to Houston. So, you know, honestly, like, as strange as it sounds, like, it didn't really feel uncomfortable. You know, everybody was wearing a mask. Nobody was making a huge deal about it. I was very lucky that my 6 and 8 year old both really enjoy wearing masks. So I know a lot of parents out there probably are not having that kind of luck, but my 6 year old son is usually kind of a brute and he actually loves wearing it. So it wasn't too bad, but it's certainly for anyone who has not flown since, it's certainly a little bit of a nerve wracking experience. You kind of sit down in the seat and settle in a little bit, but you know, they hand out, you know, as many alcohol wipes as you want. It's kind of weird the first time. Getting on there and like wiping all my kids' seats down, wiping all my seats down. But honestly, like, hey, you know, as much as I travel during the spring, like, man, I've seen some nasty stuff, like people not wearing shoes or socks on a plane. And like, maybe that's what we need on the plane all the time is like, just make that thing almost like a doctor's office. I think I'll take that at this point.
Yeah, I noticed we were looking at flights to Atlanta or to Arizona for baseball.
Yeah.
Going to tournaments, but we noticed that Southwest had open seats until September. So I guess they're going to give open seats until then, and then they're going to pike everybody in like sardines. So it's a little crazy out there. So let's talk about the Arkansas Razorbacks, the Omahawks. And it seems like over the past 5 years, they've really become a national brand, and you've had some really good coverage and content about the Razorbacks. Do you think they will be? It's going to be sustainable success as long as Van Horn's there, or could it be even after he's gone?
No, I think Arkansas is here to stay, and you know, I think when you look at a variety of factors out there, obviously, you know, Dave Van Horn, he's got a long way to go. I mean, I'd be shocked if he's not coaching probably another decade. So, well, we've got a long way to go before he's done. But you know, I think when you look at what this program has done overall. You know, you look at Van Horn and the success he had at certainly Nebraska to turn that program into what it was. And now look at what Nebraska is. I'm not saying that, you know, they can't have success, but, you know, it kind of gives you an idea just how good he is to turn that program into what it was. And so, you know, you look at the consistency Arkansas has had. They're bringing in top tier recruiting classes every year. They're attracting premier assistants. You know, they lose Tony Vitello. And guys like that, they bring in, you know, a stud like Matt Hobbs or a stud like Nate Thompson. So Arkansas is just in one of those positions where whether it's in recruiting or whether it's in coaches, man, they're just plugging studs in there left and right. And so I think it's certainly sustainable. And when you look at, you know, what the school has done from a facility standpoint, you know, it's for me, it's Arkansas and Mississippi State is kind of the trailblazers from a facility standpoint. I was just looking at Hunter Yurachek's Twitter the other day, and he had updated pictures of the new facility. And, you know, that's really exciting. You know, I texted with Van Horn a couple weeks ago and said, dude, at some point, like, Baum Stadium is going to be totally enclosed. Like, there's not going to be, you know, there's not going to be any openings in that whole ballpark. And he kind of laughed, but it's the truth. Like, this program continues to just do more and more things to its facility. So I think when you combine the recruiting territory, you know, being close to Texas, being close to Oklahoma, having the ability to go out to California if you need to get a couple of guys here and there, the fan support, the money flowing in, the facilities. There's no reason why this is not sustainable. And, you know, am I going to sit here and say it's as easy to win at an elite level at Arkansas as it is maybe Florida? Absolutely not. I mean, Florida has plenty of built-in advantages because of recruiting and things like that. But there's no reason at this point to think it's not sustainable. You know, I kind of consider Arkansas to be kind of like Texas Tech on steroids a little bit. Like, they both kind of have similar, like, attributes in the sense of, like, you know, they're not close to, like, a huge city. They're not far, but they're not close. You know, they both have a lot of fan support. They both have, you know, athletic directors that win the pump money in the baseball, and they're both having a lot of success. So it's been exciting to follow. I mean, this is a program that I think from a fan standpoint has certainly deserved where this program or what this program has become, actually.
That's a really good comparison with Texas Tech. And, of course, we've had to battle them the last couple of years. And you talk about, you know, losing Wes Johnson, you replace him with Matt Hobbs. You lose a Tony Vitello who, when he recruited the guys like Clayton Gray and Caden Wallace to Arkansas, he told those guys, look, I'm not going to be here when y'all get on campus because my goal is to be a head coach. And it's really important that DVH gets those guys in there that have the same goals in mind. But looking at the team going into next year, do you think it'll be a little bit different, or you think it'll be the same type of team? They're just going to plug and play and get some of these youngsters like Wallace and like maybe an Ethan Bates or some of the new guys. Just talk about what you've seen from some of the new guys that are coming in, maybe a Brady Slavens that's going to transfer. What do you think about the club next year?
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually really excited about this team. I had them in my Omaha 8, and that's probably being a little ambitious for Arkansas going into next year. But, you know, I think I look at this club top to bottom, and I feel pretty good about the pitching. I think the pitching will be better. I think when you look at the return of Connor Nolan, I think we all felt like Connor had taken a little bit of a step forward from a stuff standpoint. His velo was better. I felt like the secondary stuff was better. He certainly has the frame. You know, Patrick Wicklander. You know, he talked to earlier about, you know, not going to Shriners. Probably a good thing if you're looking to see Patrick Wicklander pitch well, because he was terrible in Houston. But, you know, he's a guy that has certainly shown in the past that he can be very consistent as well. So I think when you look at those two as kind of your 1-2 punch, you know, you look at, you know, the return of Peyton Pallett. He was a freshman. I was really excited to get a chance to see him a few times in the spring, because in the fall, you know, DVH was Peyton Pallett this, Peyton Pallett that. You know, you look at Zed Vermillion, he's a guy that I expect to take steps forward. You know, Jacob Burton is a power arm that, you know, has earned rave reviews in the fall in the past that, you know, needs to kind of show it in the spring. Or Caden Monk, you know, Elijah Trust kind of reminds me of Kosti Schock in a sense. He's not a very big guy. Like, he's just very lanky, but he's got a really lively arm. He could have had a year like Kosti did a couple of years ago. And then you look at the addition of a guy like Eli Lockhart from University of Houston. And, again, I feel like his numbers are deceiving. I've seen Lyle pitch, you know, probably 6 or 7 times throughout his career. And, you know, you look at his numbers last year, you're like, oh, those are pretty pedestrian, the American. But I think he's a really, really solid role pitcher. You can't put a price tag on a guy with that much experience. He's going to throw 3 pitches from the left side. He's going to pound the strike zone. So I think getting a guy like that's a benefit. And then Cole Ramage is certainly, you know, as we've seen his first season, is certainly a guy that can go out there and put together a strong year too. So I think from a pitching standpoint, I actually really like the foundation. And, you know, again, I think if we look at Matt Hobbs, there's zero reason to think this pitching staff won't take another step forward. And then offensively, you know, you look at the, you know, the return of Christian Franklin. I felt like Christian was about to have a big time, just breakout season. He had a good freshman year, but, you know, I thought he was going to become kind of like, I'm not going to say Heston Kjerstad, because I don't know if he'll be a top 3 or 4 pick in the draft, but I think he could have taken a big step forward like that. You know, Matt Goodhart, Jacob Nesbitt, you know, Robert Moore. I mean, what can you say about Robert Moore? I mean, to come straight out of high school, the way he did at such a young age and perform at the level that he did early on the season. I'm just really excited about the foundation of this offense too. I think the offense, strangely enough, I actually kind of feel like the offense has a little bit more of a question mark than maybe the pitching. Like, I feel actually really good about the pitching right now. And then, you know, offensively, I think you look at the top half of the lineup, certainly the return of Casey opens at the top. You know, the top 5 or 6 look pretty good, and the bottom of the lineup will be kind of the question mark going into the fall. And so I see no reason why this is not a top 10, top 12 caliber club. And like I said, I've got him going to Omaha, and we'll see if that happens.
And Kendall, a unique position that we have really in that room right now would be catcher. Of course, both of the grad transfers, Robert Emery and A.J. Lewis, they had come in, and then once Casey Opitz didn't get drafted, decided to come back to Arkansas, they went ahead and went the pro route. And just from your perspective, do you feel like they both made the right move, or is maybe trying their shot in college, do you think it would have benefited either one of them? They're staying
well,
in college.
Yeah, you know what? A.J. Lewis is the one that's the most interesting to me. You know, Robert Emery makes a lot of sense when you look at his track record. I think when you look at A.J. Lewis, though, you know, he's a guy that, you know, I talked to some coaches about it when he went to the transfer portal, and they felt like that he had some work to do behind the plate. They felt like that he needed to get a little bit better with some of the swing and miss stuff that gets thrown at him sometimes as a hitter. He put up great numbers to start the season at EKU, but as we all know, I mean, you know, playing the competition that Eastern Kentucky does versus what Arkansas does is a little different. And so, you know, the differences in his averages, even early this season, versus, you know, guys throwing 92 or harder or 92 or below was much different. So, I think A.J. Lewis is a guy that could have certainly benefited from coming back. You know, Robert Emery, maybe not as much. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, strangely enough, like, I'm just not one to, like, judge guys that sign because, like, maybe he just felt like the deal he was getting was okay even though it was only $20,000. Maybe he just felt like the time was now for him. And so, you know, the other thing to think about here when you look at A.J. Lewis is, you know, maybe he didn't see his future being behind the plate. And he's, you know, maybe being shipped around to first, or maybe he's being shipped around the corner outfield spot. But at the end of the day, you're getting an All-American catcher back. And so, in a way, it's easy to see why, you know, guys might look at other options.
And depending on who you ask, at one point, Casey Martin, he was really in some mock drafts, he was at a top 15, top – I even saw as early as top 10 at one point. He obviously dropped to the third round of the Phillies in June. Do you feel maybe that he is best suited in the pros at third base, or, and this is something Kevin and I had talked about before, maybe even the outfield, or do you feel that they should keep him at yeah. shortstop?
Well, I don't think he should be at shortstop. I know that much. I'll be honest with you guys. You know, I don't know what y'all think, but, you know, I actually really, really liked him at the hot corners his freshman year. Like, I thought he was very solid defensively over there. I thought he showed a really strong arm. I liked him over there, and I totally get why DVH and company moved him over to short, but I really liked him over at third base. I think the other option would be center field. He certainly has the ability to cover a lot of ground. So those are the two positions for me. I actually really liked him at third. My expectation is that he will move to the outfield, but I don't see him as a shortstop. I thought he struggled quite a bit shortstop. I didn't think things looked really easy and instinctual for him. And so I would look at those two positions. But I'll tell you what, you know, I said this on draft, during the draft, and, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he didn't go where we all kind of expect him to coming into the season for obvious reasons. I mean, he was very, very bad early on in terms of strike, you know, ball strike recognition. And frankly, it hadn't been the same since that final game against Oregon State. But he's one of those guys that, tell you what, I mean, if it all clicks for him again, I mean, he's got MLB All-Star written all over him. He's got power. When he's on a roll, he's a very, very good hitter. He can be a very strong defender, and certainly he has premier speed. And so, you know, I'm rooting for him. You know, he's one of those guys, he's one of the most exciting freshmen I've ever seen. And so, you know, to look at what's kind of happened to him over the last, like, year and a half, I'm actually really rooting for the kid. I think he's a premier talent, and you know, he's probably one of those feast or famine picks in the draft. But I'll tell you what, again, if he clicks, he could be one of the better players in professional baseball in the long run.
Tim Corbin during the draft, it was a really neat way that he described Casey. He said he's a triangle draft pick, and if you draw a triangle from center field to shortstop to second base, you've got a guy that could possibly play any one of the three positions. And I agree that, you know, at the hot corner over there, it was just more instinctual. He just got time to react, didn't have to think about anything. But what do you see, any prospects of maybe most of the outfield or even second base possibly?
Yeah, I mean, second base would even work. I'm trying to remember back now. It's been so long, but – you know, I remember the Shriners weekend, like when he moved towards second base, it just didn't look very natural for him. So I kind of wonder at a position like second base to, moving from short to second, if he was to play second, you're not getting as many opportunities. You're kind of, on a double play. Most instances, you're kind of the secondary guy there. I kind of wonder if that takes a little bit of pressure off of him mentally. And so he might flourish there. But, no, I mean, Tim Corbin is right. I mean, he's a guy that can essentially play, every position on the field other than probably catcher. And so, again, I really like the pick. I think to get him where you did is one of those picks that could end up looking very, very smart down the road.
And Kendall, I want to get into some of the effects that COVID has had on particular programs. Boise State being probably the biggest name that we've seen, reinstated their baseball program for the first time since 1980. Had a pretty good start, 9-5, had a competitive series with Texas, and then again saw it terminated not too long ago. Let's just say, oh, Lord forbid, that we don't have football this year. We don't know for sure that this is – I feel like there's probably going to be, regardless of what happens this fall, there's going to be more teams that drop their program, whether it be in the D1, D2 level. But let's just say we don't have football season this year. What kind of devastation, for lack of a better word, do you think that'll be for baseball teams around the country?
You know, it's going to be really interesting. I think we if football doesn't happen, which, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I think I'd be very surprised if it doesn't because I think what will happen – is if we get, let's say 3 weeks down the road here and let's say they say, you know what, we're going to tap the brakes on football. I think your worst case scenario is playing it early in the spring, which I don't know about you, but, I mean, if Arkansas is playing Alabama football at home on the same weekend as a baseball game, like, I'm kind of thinking that's pretty neat. So, like, as a one-year deal, like, I'm okay with that. I don't know if Arkansas fans will think it's neat to play Alabama football, but, I think that'd be pretty cool. So, I think that's your worst-case scenario, but there's no doubt when you look at college baseball as a whole, there are going to be more cuts. And I will say this, too. Coming into this deal, I think I even tweeted this out, but, like, I think I saw Paul Maneri at LSU said, like, he thought there were going to be, like, 20 or 25 programs cut. Like, I never thought that was going to happen because when you look at college baseball, especially these mid-majors, like, these schools are making money on college – like, making money on college baseball players – because they're, they're on 30% scholarship. So they're paying the schools 70% of their academic money. And so, I think when you look at schools around the country, I think you're going to have these kind of higher mid majors that are going to have a lot more money issues than you will these smaller mid majors, because guess what? They're not as, contingent on football to get some of the bills paid. So will there be a few more programs than two or three get cut if football's not played? Absolutely. Will it be in the 15 and 16, 17 range? I would be absolutely floored if that's the case. Because at the end of the day, for a lot of these programs, college baseball players are paying money to go to school there. And so the school's making money on them.
Before we get out of here, Kendall, I wanted to ask you, we just had the first weekend of MLB baseball, and we had the little eruption last night with Joe Kelly and Carlos. it was a lot of fun to watch. You're down there in Houston. But do you think MLB will look a lot like college baseball this fall with the sense of urgency only having 60 ball games?
I do, and I think it's pretty neat. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, I think, 160 plus games are too many. Like, as a baseball fan, like, when the college season's over, like, unless it's the Astros, just because it's the local team, man, I'm not watching MLB for like a month after the college season's over. And so I actually love the idea of having a short season. I know they will never stick with it because of television dollars and things like that. But I love it because it makes every single game important. You think about the Marlins right now. Like, they're kind of screwed because they can't play for, X amount more days. And so they're pretty much screwed because they were probably screwed anyway. But, a situation like that. Yeah, exactly. A situation like that ruins your season. You look at the Astros and, Justin Verlander goes down for 3 to 4 weeks, potentially the season. Let's just say it's 4 weeks, though. In a season like this, that's a huge, huge deal, even if he does come back. So, I kind of like it. It makes every game a lot more important. And I think if you're Major League Baseball, that's a good thing because it makes people, whether it's the serious fan or the casual fan, it makes them tune in. So it does give people kind of a taste of what college baseball is all about. Because in the SEC, in for instance, in college baseball, every single weekend is big. I remember there was one year, it was the year Vandy won the national championship. I think it was their first national championship, if I'm not mistaken. And Vanderbilt, I think, finished fifth in the SEC.
Yeah.
And they finished like a game and a half back, and they ended up winning the national championship. So you look at, you know, the number one team versus the number five team that year being a game and a half away, and that gives you an idea just how important all of those games were throughout the regular season. So I kind of like it, to be honest with you.
Well, Kendall, really appreciate you taking some time out today and giving us your input. Hopefully the next time you pick the Razorbacks to win the national championship, it will not turn out the way that it did. But, you know, sometimes
– Hey, you know what? I wasn't going to be the one to bring that up, but you just had to
do it. No, I know. I was with you all – man, that whole season. I think – because you picked them from preseason, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I picked them in the preseason. It's actually funny you mentioned that because I went from I went from picking Oregon State in, like, December to flipping my pick to Arkansas in January. So, like, I actually did the opposite of what actually happened. So, hey, you know what? I got 2 of 2, and I was a home run away from getting the – or a foul ball and a home run away from getting the other pick right. So,
yeah.
But Arkansas is going to get there. You know, it's one of those things. Like, I don't root for coaches very often, but I do think when you look at Van Horn, you look at what he's done for college baseball, whether it's at Northwestern State or, you know, remarkably what he did at Nebraska. He's one of those guys I do hope wins a national championship. So we didn't get it with Mike Martin Jr. I do feel pretty confident we will get it with Dave Van Horn.
And so, well, that was Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball. Make sure and check out their content if you have not already. The best coverage in the country that you will find. Guys, we thank you as always for listening for episode number 110. My name is Kyle Sutherland. For Kevin Bohan and Kendall Rogers, we'll catch you guys next time.
Over you, keep on smiling. What we go through.